Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
It's After Six. Michael Leibowitz is here from the confines of Osborne Correctional Institution. And he told me right before we started recording that he's in a bad mood. And that I love him in a bad mood. Not because I wish him to be in a bad mood, but it makes him a little more visceral and maybe stronger in his opinion. So, Michael, thank you for bringing your bad mood here.
You're welcome, Todd. Thanks for having me.
What's got you aggravated?
Well, there's something kind of set me off this morning, but there's bigger things that I want to talk about, but I'll give you the first thing. So you made a comment the other day, and I think it's true, that the media has a business model. They're in the business to make money, and therefore they do what they can to cater to their audience. And I agree with that. And last night I watched the debate. I didn't really think there was a clear winner. I thought that Kamala Harris was more personable. I thought Pence was a little rude, but there was no big, you know, fireworks or anything, no big revelations. And this morning I put on Glenn Beck. And during the primary, I listened to Glenn Beck because he was the only right-wing talk host that I thought was telling the truth about Donald Trump. He would, you know, eviscerate him every day when Rush and Sean Hannity and others were, you know, praising him on the regular. So I put on Glenn Beck today, and he says, Mike Pence wiped the floor with her last night. And then he, you know, goes on to say, you know, he's praying for Trump, and Trump is this great fighter, and, you know, basically he's the greatest thing since Jesus. And it just occurred to me that none of this has anything to do with conviction. During the primary, Glenn Beck wanted Ted Cruz to win, so he went after Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump's in office, and Glenn Beck hates the left-wing media and Democrats, so he's going to stand up for Donald Trump. And that's his business model. And it just, the lack of integrity, it just scares me that people are like that. So that kind of reinvigorated a bad mood that started the other night as a result of a rant that you received, which referenced me, and the woman referenced that I tried to have two people killed and therefore I shouldn't be on the radio. I didn't try to have two people killed. I hate to even say it because it sounds ridiculous. I did intend to have somebody stabbed, which is horrible enough, but I did not attempt to have two people killed. So she was wrong about that, but the lack of acceptance and the judgment of me for my behavior when I was just out of adolescence, it just got me thinking about my childhood, kind of, and mm-hmm. I hate to talk about my childhood. Like you said, visceral. You want visceral from me. And the reason I'm reluctant to do that, Todd, is because I loathe self-pity. I loathe people making excuses for their conduct, and I never want to come off like that. So if I talk about my childhood, which wasn't all sunshine and puppies, it's my fear that I'm going to come off as making excuses for my behavior, which is the last thing I want to do. So do you follow me so far?
Yep. I'm not too concerned about your fear, though. I mean, the interesting thing about humans is the thing that we fear, that is the thing we focus on making sure we don't do because it scares us so much that we might do that because we hate that behavior. That's the thing we can be pretty sure we're not going to do.
Okay. So let me just tell you a little bit about my upbringing. My earliest memory, I was 3 years old, and my father and his friend had ripped off some drug dealers. They came to my house, they shot up my house, they shot my father's friend in the leg. My mother covered me up to walk me up the stairs to make sure that I was safe. Now, through all this, you have to remember, my parents were drug addicts. They were very neglectful. I found needles all over the house. When I was 4 or 5, my mother's boyfriend beat my mother and I up. My mother started leaving me home alone when I was 6. When I came home crying because I was getting picked on in the neighborhood, she locked me out and told me I had to learn how to fight. At 6, she then told me that if someone was bothering me, there was a kid in the neighborhood, she told me to go hit him with a beer bottle. I was 6. That's what I did. I went and hit him with a beer bottle. my house got broken into around the same time. My father's friend was beaten with a hammer by a masked man, and I was there. About 8 years old, my house got raided because my mother and her husband were selling drugs. I woke up in the middle of the night, and that's what it was. Cops were there. A couple years later, my mother overdosed. I woke up again to the sound of walkie-talkies. And going to school, I have to tell you, was no fun with this because the kids always read my parents' names in the paper. They would make fun of me. When I was about 8, my father and his wife beat my mother in the street, kicked her. And when I was crying, a Weathersfield police officer grabbed me, shook me, and told me to act like a man. When I was 12 years old, my father was in prison, and he called me on the telephone and told me to take a baseball bat to the back of the legs of my mother's husband. The first gun I ever owned, I bought from my father's friend.
Well, hang on a sec, Michael. Does this list... is there any reason we shouldn't break off from the list now and talk about what all this means to you as opposed to just continuing through the events?
Because
I think we get the picture.
Okay. Well, the picture is that I was taught by example and by words that violence was the way to solve problems. I was neglected. And what I'm wondering is people like the woman that called who want to judge me now for what I did when I was 21 years old, where were those people when I was going through that? I don't remember, you know, them barnstorming the social services department to try to get me out of that environment or try to rescue me from the destruction that was taking place of my mind and character. But then when it's all said and done, and the point is ultimately, Todd, is that I've overcome that stuff. I've put in a monumental amount of work to alter my character, to enlighten my mind so that I'm not that person that committed those crimes any longer. But if somebody's going to judge me for what I did 23 years ago, they ought to take into consideration the context from which I came. And it's not an excuse. I made my own choices. But nonetheless, that was the environment I was subjected to. So with that, feel free to ask me anything you'd like.
Well, I like the way you've presented this. I like how you've linked the revelations of your past and how you got launched in life into a life of crime at an early age, and how that connects to the phone call we got the other day. And I like that that phone call ticks you off because it opens up a whole world of indignities with regard to how humans in general treat each other, that she was showing a certain bigotry towards you. That is a refusal to consider who you are as an individual, instead wanting to judge you based on the group that you belong to and how she feels about that group. And I think we all do this, that it's a normal part of life and a normal part of how humans separate from each other, how we differentiate ourselves from each other, and we put everybody into categories and boxes, and that's just what we do. So I think you have to not be so sensitive to that criticism, that is her mistrust of you and feeling that you shouldn't be on the radio because of what you did in your past. There's a lot of people who feel that way, so you have to seize the opportunity to address it and convince them why they're wrong, because you're the one with the unique opportunity to speak not just for yourself but for everybody in your situation, and to prove to people who have this bigotry that they've built up for whatever reason that it's misplaced, and to reassess it.
Yeah, I led you down the wrong path. I couldn't care less what that woman thinks of me on her own. It doesn't make a damn difference to me in my life. She doesn't know me. I don't care. I do care, though, about what happens when I get out of here and whether or not people are going to be willing to, like I told you yesterday, hire me, rent to me, treat me like a human being. And I also care about something else you said, that I'm speaking for other people. Because inmates know that Brent and I are on your show. Inmates listen to the show. And if inmates hear that no matter what they do, no matter what they accomplish, they're never going to be accepted in society, the message that gets sent is, why bother trying? What's the point? And that's what I want to prevent from happening.
You reached out to me. We made contact. You did it through an intermediary. We did an interview. I said, why don't you come on regularly? Now for a year and a half, you've been coming on as often, as close to once a week as we can do. Sometimes we hit it, sometimes we can't.
Yeah.
And occasionally there's one of these people who calls up and has these notions about you, but you've got to put that in the context of the situation you're in. You're obviously going to draw out some of those people if you're high profile, which you are.
That's true. You have a good
so
point.
So what's the big deal?
Well, you know, it's funny because just on the day that you got that call, I was at work and a guy was having a discussion with my boss. And my boss was telling him how people on the outside don't accept criminals. And I can tell that this guy was getting upset. And I knew why, because he was taking it personal as an indictment of him. And, you know, I told him that and I talked to him about it. And then that very night, I heard what that woman had to say. So it kind of was, it hit me at a raw moment. You know, and it's the thing is, whenever I start to kind of feel sorry for myself, and this environment is conducive to self-pity, you had an interview, a couple interviews with my ex-cellmate and best friend, Brett McCall, and the integrity that he demonstrates whenever I hear him, and that's why I'm so grateful to you that you have him on, it inspires me. It inspires me to be better, to not give up, and to just keep striving, because I know that's what he's doing. So I just, you know, thank you for that, Todd. I know you don't do it for me, but thank you for recognizing him and recognizing his growth and thinking it's worth putting him on the air.
Well, I do it for all of us because it's a wonderful thing to hear all the voices that there are to be heard. And certainly people in your situation aren't heard. And there's something about you, both you and Brent, you're so unusual and you're so intelligent and so...
You have 1 minute left.
So balanced in what you present of yourselves, you know, like such healthy people in the parts of you that we get to explore, that it's fascinating. And it's a learning experience for everybody. It's a huge opportunity. You going to call us back?
I am. Okay, Todd, now.
The caller has hung up.
Leibowitz.
Feinberg.
So anyway... This is great that you do this. It's great that you get to come on and become visible. And like you said, I think your old buddy Brent McCall is a role model for all humans. That is to take the long game, and you build towards the things you want one small step at a time. And you don't look at how long the road is in front of you. You just make sure you're doing a good job with each of those steps each day. And before you know it, you're accomplishing amazing things. So you've got to continue selling yourself, and which you do just by being here and just by talking. Everybody's, I think, enjoying our sessions, and for the most part, people like you. And by the way, did you hear somebody called yesterday?
Yes, I did. Maybe I
didn't play that. Oh, you did? Okay, good.
I did.
What did he say?
He said he takes his hat off to me. I've done what I can to change myself, and he said that's what integrity. He said I admit my wrongs.
Yes.
And he said that if he had a job available, he'd give it to me.
Yes. But he used the word integrity. I thought that was a beautiful thing to use the word integrity, because that's how I feel about you and Brent. I feel like you're men of integrity, and that's incongruous to most people's perception of things.
I can't tell you how much that means to me, and it actually offers an excellent segue into what I wanted to say. Is, you know, when it comes to Brent has more integrity than any human being I've ever met in my life. There's never been a time, you know, somebody will tell you, I'll call you at this time, or I'll do this, or I'll do that. And, you know, in the back of your mind, you wonder, is it going to happen? With Brent, I never had to doubt it. When Brent told me something's going to get done, it gets done. It reminds me of a short story by Elbert Hubbard called A Message to Garcia, about a guy that gets a job done with no excuses, and that's who Brent is to me. And to touch a little bit on your discussion with Brent the other day, and this also ties into my feelings kind of helplessness after that phone call that you received, is that the environment in prison is one, and Brent said this beautifully, that where our conduct doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much we strive, how much we try, how much good we do. We don't get rewarded for it. And conversely, the people who are constantly doing wrong don't get punished for it. And it leads to a situation where you end up feeling, why bother? But when I'm talking to you right now and you've reminded me of how much actually has happened that's good for us, being on your show as a case in point, and it leads in, just reminds me that there are good people out there, there are things worth striving for, and doing right ultimately usually gets rewarded. And I thank you so much for that, Todd. I can't tell you how grateful I am.
Well, I thought that conversation was wonderful with Brent the other day, and what you just quoted from it is just right. And, you know, I don't know where all this leads, but I know what you guys are up to, and the two of you are, you know, you wrote a book, and you you do these radio interviews with me with a goal towards creating a new view of the system so that, well, with the hope, I think, that people, that if regular people come to understand what a ridiculous waste of money and what a destructive force the so-called Department of Corrections is, that change will take place. And the key to that is to be able to see through those walls and know what goes on the other side. So you guys have to look at the long game in terms of being agents for political change, because it is so ridiculous the way the Department of Corrections exists. And I'm thankful for it from the point of view of it demonstrating what I think is just the template of government. The government creates flows of money away from the people who are in the money into its own possession, and then figures out ways to spend that money in perpetuity so that it enhances their ability to win elections. And it's one government is an election rigging scheme, and the Department of Corrections is an election rigging scheme, and there is no attempt to cut down on recidivism and to rehabilitate and to correct. And the whole name of the Department of Corrections is a hoax, and the whole department is a hoax.
I couldn't have said it better myself. I'm not real fond of the word hoax these days, but you have a point when it comes to the Department of Correction. It definitely is a hoax. And I, you know, it's got me this watching government, even beyond correction, Todd. You've said that sometimes you just feel like throwing up your hands and saying, why do we even need government? And I got to tell you, lately, I've been feeling the same way. It's like, what do these people do that they do good? And I'm like you, I can't think of a single thing.
Well, not only that, the amounts of money that they rob from humanity, the amount of destruction to the creative wealth that mankind generates in our country that has created more of it over the last 70 years than probably all of human history combined. And what all we have to show for it is debt, state and federal. All we have to show for it is debt for being the greatest economic machine in the history of mankind. We are a crumbling nation in most every way you can look at it. Our systems don't work. Our infrastructure is deteriorated. We really have nothing to build on right now, except we've got the great economic machinery still that was built. And if we can just stop government from robbing us blind, we can get back to where we're supposed to be. But they're too committed to the scam, and they're so malicious with every move they make, and everybody falls for their cover stories. It's a very frustrating thing. So that's where the Department of Corrections is provides hope for the future in an ironic way.
Well, it definitely gives us the opportunity to expose government incompetence and corruption. That's for sure. So I don't know.
All right, Michael Leibowitz.
We have
a minute.
Before we go, Todd, you've cheered me up. You often do that. You inspire me, and for that, I just thank you so much for being my friend, really, Todd. Just thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Well, likewise. Thank you, Michael, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, beautiful.
Our thanks to Michael Leibowitz, who's a regular from our collection of prisoners we talk to, and we're going to talk to one of those who got out of prison 6 months ago. We haven't talked to him since a month or two before that. I think Jason Galino is his name. And he's here to talk to us about trouble that he's had in making the transition from prison into the outside world. And that trouble is caused by the prison system itself. We'll talk about that coming up after news on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.